All right, so our class objectives are that in going through this, that we're going to learn about the land, the fulfillment of the land promise, Joshua, that's where this is happening. So that promise that had been made, we see that occurring, that we learned about serving the Lord in these days of Joshua, and tonight's lesson's a good one, and like I say, we've got several more that'll be coming up that show us a lot about serving the Lord. The character of Joshua, that, you know, you learn a lot about people, about leaders and how they handle defeat and crisis. And so again, tonight, as we're studying, move it up. It sounds loud from here. Okay. So, we get a good chance to learn about the character. This is another archaeology kind of class, not to the same level as our class on Jericho. When we get to Hazar, we'll have another chance to kind of do a little bit. But this really kind of comes down to reading geography. It is a little frustrating that probably of any of the cities taken, that this gives the most information about the geography of where the battle for Ai was going on, and yet there are people who say that Ai was never taken by Joshua, that there was no Ai there at the time. So we will spend a little bit of time on that, and then of course we'll discuss some about giving a ready defense, because Ai is another one of those cities that, again, you will hear many people say Joshua never took it because it was not there. The conquest never happened. If the conquest never happened, then the Exodus never happened. So it's important to at least understand what's being discussed in those things. We are in that second section. We are conquering the land. Our second city, Ai, and a good bit of time is spent here, and so that's where we're at. And where we were at in our kind of just a bit of review, always have some people that weren't here for any of the earlier classes, but you know, when we were preparing to cross into the Promised Land, into Canaan, Joshua faced some challenges that he had to deal with people who had failed the last time. That 40 years ago, they came kind of to this point, and they said, we can't do it. The people, there are giants in the land, that these cities are walled, we can't do it. And so here, after 40 years, they're getting another shot at it. So you got to know how much fear or doubt that can bring in. Would they have enough strength and courage to tackle the job? You had a new leader. You had, I mean, following Moses. I mean, that's who you're following as a leader. And so, a new leader. So there's questions about that. This new generation, I mean, they'd been in the wilderness wandering. So here is really their time to demonstrate their faith in the Lord. You're dealing with a swollen river, that it's at the flood time. And so the river is flooded. And so, how can you cross that? You can, again, easily imagine that the king of Jericho is saying, hey, listen, there's no way they can get across that river, that I have time. There's nothing to fear. You have a walled city. As we talked about on Sunday, that if you want to talk about a walled city, that you want your mind to say, wow, that's a walled city. Jericho is that city. And so there's this walled city, and there's this whole unknown people and situation. And so what we have is this verses repeating again and again to be strong and courageous, and God telling Joshua that just as I was with Moses, so I'm going to be with you. I'm not going to leave you or forsake you. People are told to be strong and courageous. People prepared. They spend 3 days kind of getting things ready to go. Check to make sure that those tribes that were staying across on the other side of Jordan, that they were prepared to dedicate themselves to this conquest, sends the spies into Jericho, and finds out that the people, that their hearts are melted, that they are afraid of these Israelites. And then it was the Lord who took care of that river and took care of that walled city. So a city, a river in flood stage, and they're able to cross it as on dry land. And so that swollen river that you can just imagine how we're going to get all our people across that. The Lord takes care of that. And it's said that, you know, on that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all of Israel, and they stood in awe of him just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. So that, again, that the Lord sort of, you know, the situation was set there so that this was an opportunity to demonstrate that he was indeed with Joshua. And then a walled city, a double walled city. And as we said, that it had a retaining wall that was about 15 feet high, and then you started the walls. So that's what they're going up against. And as we went over the game plan, right? You know, who here, as if you were a secular general or general today, is there anybody who would follow the plans that the Lord set out for Joshua? Anybody? Come on now. I mean, we're talking, this is like ultra-modern warfare, right? That the people shouting, those horns blowing, that wall came down. Is that the reason the walls came tumbling down? Nope. Who caused those walls to come down? The Lord. It wasn't that shouting. Now, you got to admit that you're a little impressed with the people, those Israelites, right? Those people following. And we have even in the New Testament, we're told, listen, you know, these people, it was by faith that the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. That if you looked at the wisdom of man, this is not how you would take this city. But they had faith in the Lord, they had faith in Joshua, and they went around and they walked 6 times, just going around once, and on that 7th day, they went 7 times, and the walls fell down. So now, we had kind of talked about in our preparation that there are two cities that kind of serve as a barrier to the conquest. The first one is Jericho. Those walls, and you just say, there's no way you're going to get through those. So now they're through those, but there's a second city that they need to take. That when they take that second city, you see, they're kind of in that lowlands, right? The plains of Jordan there, of the river. And they've got to come up and get onto the highlands. And it's the city of Ai that's kind of between them and sort of being able to get on the road, the highway, that will take them back and forth through the land of Canaan. Here's just kind of another map, another attempt just to kind of give you a visual of just, you know, what they, where they're at, that you think, man, we got Jericho done. You know, this is going to be easy from now on. But again, they've got to come up and they've got to get up into those highlands. I figured, you know, by the 6th lesson, I really should have a map of the map that you have in your folder. So this is pulled from that. And so we're dealing with that area, that 5X area that you've got Jericho, and again they're going to come up through this wadi, this erosion to the land. And so Joshua used spies at Jericho, so he says, hey, I'm going to use spies to go up to Ai. And so they go up there and, you know, they say, listen, you know, you don't need everybody. You know, 2,000-3,000 men can go up and can take the city of Ai. So here they're ready to go up. Or, you know, they, first of all, a good bit of confidence, right? You know, hey, we don't need everybody. We just take 2,000 or 3,000 people and we can take this little town. So, you know, they have a little bit of good confidence. And, you know, they kind of, rather than going with the low side, too, they were a little conservative and they had 3,000 go up. Now, again, to just give you a feel, that here sits Jericho, and you have these wadis. So the one wadi that takes you up will take you up to Jerusalem. And then if you go up by this valley of Zeboim, they'll kind of take you up to where Ai is. And then if you follow this ridge, it'll take you up into the region where Ephraim's going to be populated. So they're kind of sitting there. They have the different paths, and so they're going to enter in with the Ai, meaning kind of, again, smaller town. And so if they get that, then they can work the ridge line. So part of the reason for not having all the people to go up, that's a climb. And just give you another feel, this is looking at that Jerusalem. So you can imagine, having all your soldiers or all your people kind of to go up, walking up through that. It's a now, in the days of Jesus, you know, when it talks, I mean, he's at the Jericho of the New Testament time, and they walk on up there. And so you do walk in back, but here you're bringing your army up there. So rather than wearing out your army, bringing them all up to get them up to that higher elevation, they say, you know, let's just bring 2,000 or 3,000. So they get up there. How well do they do? How's it go? Not well at all. Okay. So, I mean, when we study about Jericho, what do we study about the people, the Canaanites in Jericho, their heart's melting. But here at Ai, it says that the Israelites, that their heart melted. And so they fled and ran away. And so, a significant defeat. So, what happened? They didn't depend on the Lord. Okay. Although the Lord said that he was going to be with them. I mean, they did everything they needed to do at Jericho, right? Was there anything wrong at Jericho?
Somebody took the
Okay. Now, did they didn't know that at that time, did they? So now they could have asked the Lord, hey, are you ready, Lord, for us to go up to Ai? And they might not have known. So they come back in defeat. And we see Joshua. He tore his clothes. He fell on the earth before the ark, and they just laid there facing the ark until evening had come. He and the elders, they put dust on their heads. Again, this kind of a, they're in mourning. And again, in shock too here. And then Joshua says, alas, O Lord God, why have you brought the people over the Jordan at all? To give us into the hands of the Amorites? To destroy us? Would it not have been, would that we had been content to dwell beyond the Jordan? O Lord, what can I say? That when Israel has turned their backs before the enemies, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it and will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name? So, with Joshua, we find out some things, right? Okay. So, you know, what is he saying? You know, why did we go up there? What does he say would have been better than for them to go up and face this defeat? Stay on the Jordan, right? Because that's where Gad, Reuben, half of Manasseh was. That they would have been better off to stay on that side. Now, that's pretty shocking, right? Because had they crossed into the promised land when they were on that side of the Jordan? the land that the Lord had promised to Abraham? No, they weren't there yet. They had to get across the Jordan. Now, how similar does this sound to when the people first came out of Exodus? Does that bring back some memories? Do you get flashbacks there? Right. Now, where did they want to go? Where do they want to go? Back to Egypt. Okay. So did Joshua want to go back to Egypt? No, he didn't want to go back to Egypt. He said, well, just let me get to the other side. Just let me be on the other side. Let's go back. So, I mean, that's kind of his reply there. So, a little bit sounding like the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, but again, not to that extent of saying, oh, why have you brought us out here to die? So, but he had a couple of concerns, right, about dying. So what was one of the things that he feared would happen? That the inhabitants would hear and they would gang up, right? So that would be one of the things. And then the other was he was concerned about the name of the Lord. So now that's a little bit different because did we hear the Israelites making that statement when they came out of Egypt? I don't remember them even getting close to that. So, you know, we're a little concerned that Joshua says, oh, why did we ever come over here? Why did we ever do this? So you kind of say, well, you know, Joshua, you know, remember, it was those kind of statements that got us stuck into 40 years of wandering. But then as he kind of talks through, we realize, A, his concern is that all the inhabitants are now going to rise up and cut them off. And then second of all, he was concerned about the name of the Lord. So we see there a little bit different about the nature of Joshua. And so I had those there, but you know, we can see that's pretty clutch, right? So that here they're trapped up against the Red Sea, a pretty stressful situation. You know, something to be very concerned about. And they say, you know, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. So, again, kind of similar sounding, but as we kind of hit some of those notes and look at a little deeper, we see there is some difference in that comment. Yes, Cherry. Yeah, when I read the passage, I get no sense that Joshua went up there. And so you sort of have that guilt, right? I mean, especially as a leader, something bad happens, and you say, if only I had gone up. I mean, when the high management guys from our company come and stuff, and we're talking about safety, you know, they say, I want you to be aware of safety, I want to talk about safety, because I don't want to be making a call that you're dead. And so here, this failure, defeat that you do, as you said, I think you get that feeling that Joshua, that could have been some of that underlying. Yep. So, you know, that's good comments there about, you know, it's Israel that's turned their back there. So God responds and says, you know, Joshua, get up. Why have you fallen on your face? That there's got to be a reason for the defeat, right? So Chester was good getting there ahead of us there, saying that somebody had sinned or done something wrong in the taking of Jericho. And so Lord says, Joshua, Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They have taken some of the devoted things, they have stolen and lied, and put them among their own belongings. Therefore, the people of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. I will be with you no more unless you destroy the devoted things from among you. Get up, consecrate the people, and say, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow there are devoted things in your midst, O Israel. You cannot stand before your enemies until you take away the devoted things from among you. Okay, so the Lord is in the process of a big fulfillment here, right? I mean, back in the days of Abraham, said, Abraham, this land's going to be yours. These people wandered for 40 years for the last time they were disobedient. And so here they come. The Lord helps them cross the river. The Lord helps them take Jericho. How then can the Lord say, Joshua, you're not going to win any more battles. I'm not with you. You've got to go out and find who did this. So, can you think of somebody you might talk today with that would say, how could the Lord bring about this judgment because of one man? Right? Can you imagine ever having a conversation with somebody that would shake their head at the Lord for this? How many people make the argument, you have got to be kidding me. Just because of one person, the Lord says, hey, you know, I made the promise to Abraham, but someone in your congregation has sinned, and you're not going to succeed until you take care of this matter. So, I mean, it really, part of what you learn, right? We're learning about serving the Lord. So the Lord is pretty serious about His commandments. Now, the other thing is, can we think of a New Testament occasion where the Lord's pretty harsh in His judgment? Ananias and Sapphira. That's right. Ananias and Sapphira. You're right. That, you know, kind of sounds very similar there. And that's a thing to kind of, you know, you don't always think of the history of Israel kind of in conjunction with the history of Acts, do you? Because, I mean, Acts, I mean, that's one book, and we spend several books going over the history. But here the people are, you know, trying to get set up in that promised land. And so just as Ananias and Sapphira gave a powerful lesson, here, we're going to get a powerful lesson from Achan. And so, you know, it's said here that, you know, the command was that all the devoted things were to go to the Lord, but it said that Achan had broken that faith and had taken some devoted things. And so, imagine all of Israel's pulled together, all by tribes, and it says, Judah, you come out and separate yourself. And then it says they brought the clan of the Zerahites, man by man. And so here, you know, going man by man, and then it says, Zebedah, you've been taken. Sing out your household. And so they start going household by household till they come to Achan. So that's a pretty powerful demonstration by the Lord, isn't it? And just imagine that you're in that crowd, and even worse, you're Achan, or you're standing by Achan. Don't you know he's getting nervouser and nervouser because he knows he's guilty? And so it just keeps coming in and in till it gets to his house. So did Achan deny it? Did he? No, he didn't. Why didn't he deny it? I mean, isn't that what people do nowadays? They start lying, say, no, I didn't do it. It's pretty hard to lie when you've gone through that whole system of targeting right into the person that's involved. Yeah. I think we wish we had missiles as good as that, right? To be able to narrow in like that. Yes, Catherine. I think it's noteworthy. I'm not sure that I would. I'm not sure how I could apply that to some other point, but I did take note of that. That hey, it was somebody from Judah who did this, because Judah is going to be kind of significant down the road, right? So it is again interesting that it was a person of Judah, but I'm not sure how I would draw some other lesson or point from that. So, you know, Achan says, yep, I have truly sinned, that as I was going through, that there was this really, really nice cloak, Shinar from Babylon, 200 shekels of silver, 50 shekels of gold. So it's about 70 ounces of silver, and then a little under 18 ounces of gold, so that he saw these things, and he took them, and he hid them under his tent. And so, sin doesn't change, does it? I mean, actually, we could have also put up the problem with Eve, right? And the serpent. And we could have just lined that right up, and we would see, you know, looking at James, how he describes it, and Joshua, and we look at Eve and the serpent, and this kind of the similar things fall out. That he saw these things, you know, nobody saw him take them, all the confusion of the city, and you know, I coveted them. And so in coveting them, I took them. And so James says, you know, that when we're tempted, that desire of the flesh, that lusting to covet, and then from that desire, sin is birthed, and when it's fully grown, it's going to bring death. And in the case of Achan, we're definitely going to get that. Chester, did you have a comment? Or nope. Or. Yeah. Yeah, well, we were getting there. You were one kind of comment ahead of me. So wondering why. All right, anyone want to answer Chester's question of why the whole family had to suffer? Why the donkeys had to suffer? Why the ox had to suffer? Yeah. And what do you think there's a chance, how much of Achan's family might have known that he had buried something? It was in his tent. So it doesn't just say that, but there is a possibility that they did. But the Lord passed judgment that it was sort of, again, that description of a judgment is very similar to the judgment that was given for Jericho. So that is how much the Lord did not want those devoted things taken. Because we talked about Jericho. What was special about Jericho? How many cities had fallen in the promised land before Jericho?
None.
And so, first fruits go to the Lord. And so Jericho was the first fruits. And so all was to go to the Lord. And so that is how serious the whole matter was. I mean, you know, Chester, you think, you know, you asked, it's not a bad question there of why all suffered. But then we also asked, why did those 36 men have to die because of Achan? Why did the Lord, you know, abandon them? That those men that went up to fight, they hadn't taken the devoted things. They were not the ones who were involved in what Achan was doing, but the Lord, because there was sin in the camp. So now what kind of lesson would that teach you? If you realize, again, this defeat came at Ai and the Lord's judgment. What kind of lesson would that teach you then as an Israelite as you're going about doing these things? What's a critical thing to do?
Don't sin.
Don't sin. Follow the Lord's commandments. Follow those Lord's commandments. All right. So, and they burned everything. Now, so all of Israel stoned him with stones. They burned them with fire and stoned them. And they raised over him a great heap of stones that remains to this day. Then the Lord turned from his burning anger. Therefore, to this day, the name of that place is called the Valley of Achor. So, we had those memorials there at the River Jordan, didn't we? So that when you went by there and your kid said, "Daddy, why are those stones there?" You're to tell them that the Lord stopped the Jordan River and so that they could cross over and come in. And then imagine them walking through this valley and them saying, "Dad, why are those heaps of stones there?" They have to then tell the story of Achan and what happened there. Yes, Chester. Yep. So that means it wasn't meaning today, right? It doesn't mean that we can go today and look at that. And so that would have been, that phrase is also used a good bit in Judges. So that would have been, I think, probably in the early days of at least the Judges that it was there. All right, because Joshua would have been closed out at least in the early days of Judges. So I think you're pretty good grounds to at least say to those days that those stones were there. All right. Now, we have a case. Okay, this is around 1400 B.C., right? So we have a reference to the Valley of Achor in the days of the prophet Hosea. Hosea prophesied around 750 to 722 B.C. That's over 700 years ago. All right, so I meant to take a look, and I didn't get a chance in prepping, as something to happen 700 years ago that we might quote. I mean, that's before Shakespeare, maybe the Magna Carta we might think of or whatever. But, I mean, that's the kind of things we're thinking of. I mean, Magna Carta or all that stuff. I mean, that's a long time ago. But here Hosea, in talking with, in his teaching of Israel, and it's kind of their last shot before they're gone into captivity. And Hosea, in case you don't try to say, now, which prophet, what did he talk about? He's the one who married Gomer, the unfaithful wife, adulterous wife. And so you have Hosea married to her, it appears, that she then leaves him and kind of going through Hosea's efforts to bring her back. And what we're really doing, what we're really seeing here is a very strong example of the Lord trying to bring back the northern kingdom. And so here when we get kind of to the phrase that we're talking here, the Valley of Achor, that it goes through Gomer's sins, and then you just kind of line that up, and lines up really with Israel's sins. And what's kind of interesting is that as you just keep going through Hosea, you have this call, this desire for forgiveness, and kind of here's one of those points of mercy. And so therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. So trying to bring back Gomer, trying to bring back Israel, and there I will give her vineyards and make the Valley of Achor a door of hope. And there she shall answer as in the days of her youth, as in the time when they came out of the land of Egypt. So, How many of you think of the Valley of Achor as a door of hope? Achan, the donkeys, the oxen, the family, they all died. It was all burned. So when you think of that pile, that heap of stones there, do you think of a valley of hope? Who? Okay. Right.
And then how God responds.
Yeah.
And that relationship being restored. And so I thought it was interesting the verses where Joshua was speaking to him and said, I implore you to give glory to God and to praise Him in the confession of the sin and without respect to the consequences.
Yeah.
There were going to be no consequences for Paul.
Yeah, the judgment was coming. He knew. He knew it was coming, to praise the Lord there. And so that, indeed, that with that, you know, with taking care of Achan's sin, the people then had a hope there. So that's good. Any other thoughts kind of on this? Oh, yeah. And it was a lesson to them in 1400 B.C., and the prophet Hosea was sort of saying, listen, Israel, 700 years later, but still remember the lesson of Achan. Remember that lesson. And so, it's interesting that Hosea brings that up. But he's also kind of bringing that play, right? We're back at the beginning. So we are within a generation, okay? A generation of Assyria coming in and taking those people into captivity. And so this desire of Hosea the prophet, remember when you first followed the Lord. Remember when you came in that land and you were fulfilling that promise. Remember back then. Trying to get them to think back to the beginning. All right, so we come to Ai. Most writers talking about Bible geography, mainstream, will say that Et Tel is the old city of Ai that is being talked about here. And part of that is because Et is Arabic for ruin, and Ai means ruin. So they kind of say, ah, that's the city. There's a problem, though, that Et Tel was completely abandoned between 2400 B.C. and 1220 B.C. So is that in the time period we're talking about here? Of 1400 B.C.? So that's, okay, those Bell people, it's not fair. Here they are. So the city of Ai wasn't there. So how could Joshua, how could all of this happen? We've just gone through Achan and those defeats, and here the Bible geographist, you know, they say, Ai is Et Tel, and there was no city there. And so, let's see. That means that pretty much whether you're a late dater or an early dater, it doesn't work. There's no city of Ai there. And so you've got to ask yourself a question. Is Joshua and the story of the conquest a story, a fable, a myth, a legend? And we got, we'll bring this out in a couple more classes. We, of course, the time of the bell, we won't be able to cover it today, and I kind of knew we wouldn't. But again, people look at, we hit the whole thing with Joshua, with Jericho. Hey, it didn't exist in the 1400 BCs, didn't exist in the 1200 BCs, that it was destroyed in the 1550 BC. And here we come to Ai, the second city. And they say, we looked there, and there was no city there. So their conclusion is the conquest is a fable. It's a story. Now, what other conclusion could we possibly draw? Are they right? I think, you know, I don't think they were. So how do we solve that? That's right. And they've done some digging, and there's no indication that that is Ai. And so Bryant Wood, and actually it's kind of interesting, is that another fellow with this, the ABR group, kind of figured there was another city. And so actually both these guys are from the same organization, and they kind of argue over the cities. But that city's been pretty well shown not to be Ai either, because it wasn't occupied. And so here, Kebet El Marquette is the city that's proposed by Bryant Wood. They're excavating there every year, and we'll kind of hit some of the things as to that argument there, but that would indicate that the cities of Ai is about 1.6 miles. Really, if you look at the photo there, right? I mean, it's on the other side of a hill. You know, you got the city they think is Ai, got a dip, you got another hill, another kind of little dip there, and then it's there. So it's right in the area. So it's not saying that Etel is way off. One of the things that you need is you need a place where you can hide an ambush. So you kind of need the deep valley. And so they say, well, we look at the Wadi Shabin, and I mean, that's a pretty good drop there. So you can hide some 30,000 people there. Here's looking kind of from a hill on the north of Ai, and you look and you can kind of see it. So it's a place, it's got to be a place where Joshua can kind of signal everybody. And so there is that hill to the north for that. And so you go through the events that Joshua the Lord said, you know, put 5,000 men kind of hiding outside of Bethel. You got 30,000 down here on the left, well hidden. And what we're going to do is we're going to go up. Joshua and the main kind of group, we're going to go up like we're going to attack Ai. And what we're going to figure is that those men of Ai are going to say, oh, those foolish Israelites, they're here again. We beat them and we whomped them. So if we whomped them once, we can whomp them twice, right? So they come charging out of the city. And apparently, in such a fashion, and Joshua figured they would, they left the city gates open. They just went rushing after those. And Joshua says, we're going to look like we're going to retreat. So, you know, we're retreating. So, boy, that's going to really bring everybody out of the city. So when they come out of the city, these guys that have been hiding, they're going to go in, and they're going to set the city on fire. They're going to burn it, and then these other folks are going to come in here, and we're just going to kill them. And they wiped them out. So from this events here that we see a lot about Joshua, we see he's an emotional leader, isn't he? I mean, his reaction to what happened at Ai. We see his wisdom and intelligence. I mean, the battle of Ai, great, great plan. Of course, he had the help of the Lord there. That he's obedient, devoted to the Lord. So those are just some of the things. And this is when things are bad. We still see Joshua's character shining. And so here's just to give you awareness as we kind of close up here real quick before they kick me out, that what you generally hear about Ai, that Joseph Calloway, he's one of the guys who did some of the last excavation. Ai is simply an embarrassment to every view of the conquest that takes the biblical and archaeological evidence seriously. As a result, most scholars have concluded that the biblical account of the conquest of Ai in Joshua 7 to 8 is non-historical. So you see, it's kind of this importance that we understand about Ai and the archaeology here. And just one other statement, what we'll do on Sunday, get y'all all back here on Sunday, plus everybody else, is we'll kind of go through some of the findings here about Ai. But Anyway, the lack of any late bronze Canaanite city at the site of Etel, of its vicinity, contradicts the narrative of Joshua 8 and shows that it was not based on historical reality, despite its topographical and technical plausibility. So that is the kind of attitude and comments that you kind of come up with. And so hopefully we kind of gave you a little bit of information, and we'll hit you even harder on Sunday. All right, thanks a lot.